Good afternoon, brethren. Herbert Armstrong, you are simply ignorant. One is uneducated, ignorant, unless he believes in evolution. All educated people now believe it. That was back in 1925 when Herbert Armstrong was having a conversation with his sister-in-law. She was like a freshman in college because she pretty well knew most everything. You know, we've all heard words like, well, I believe this. I believe this is the way it is. Or I have always thought of it this way. I don't believe God cares about that. I've always believed this way. Our church believes in sprinkling. Well, our church believes in immersion. Our church doesn't believe in instrumental music. Our church believes in spiritual rock music. I believe the seventh day is a Sabbath. Well, I believe that every day is holy. I think alcohol's fine. I believe that you should not touch alcohol. I believe that God created man through evolution. And I believe there is no God. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3, and verse 5, Proverbs 3 and verse 5, says, "Trust in the Eternal with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding." Brethren, what is the result of man leaning to his own understanding? That's basically where we are today. If you would turn to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. And then starting in verse 18. I think we see an example here that this is nothing new, that man has always wanted to lean to his own understanding. In verse 18 of Romans chapter 1, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness." In verse 19, "Because what may be known of God is manifested in them, for God has shown it to them." You know, science has revealed the wonders of God's creation. In verse 20, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God," there was a time when they knew God, "they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened." Verse 22, "Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things, in the worship of the creation rather than the Creator." Verse 24, "Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lust of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie, and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever." Amen. In verse 26, "For this reason God gave them up to vile passions," or reprobate mind, "for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. And Mr. Armstrong, I've heard Mr. Armstrong say that one of the things that makes evolution so appealing is the freedom, or the sexual freedom that it brings. And I think this backs that up. In verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, they are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventor of evil things, disobedient to parents. Well, brethren, in, I think it was, 1859, Origin of the Species appeared by Charles Darwin, who promoted the theory of evolution. I looked up some things on Darwin, because he was born in 1809, died in 1882. He was an English naturalist, and he originated the theory of evolution by natural selection. But there's always been those out there who tried to find ways around the Creator God. You know, spontaneous life. Even when I was a child, some people believed that horsehair in a stock tank would turn into a worm, because there was a worm that looked like a horsehair. It's called a horsehair worm. And, you know, people would believe that life could just spontaneously all at once appear in some form, and then it would gradually improve. But he made evolution acceptable scientifically. Darwinian is a person who believes in the Darwinian theory of evolution. And the Darwinian theory, Darwin's theory of evolution, which hold that all species of plants and animals developed from earlier forms by hereditary transmission of slight variations in successive generations. Those forms surviving which are best adapted to the environment, which is natural selection and survival of the fittest. And while I was looking at that, I just noticed that the word Darwinist, like D-A-R-W-I-N-I-S-T, just like Darwin, means dash. It means to smash, to strike violently against, to throw, to knock, to thrust, to splash, to mix with a little of another substance. To destroy, to frustrate, discourage. The dash is a euphemistic form of damned, to damn. I thought that was interesting, his name, what it would mean. And, you know, the theory is just an example of man leaning to his own understanding. I personally call it the theory of death. Because, you know, it's death is what makes things better. You get rid of the inferior, you get rid of the less qualified, and then the best grows and improves. I want to quote from a book titled, From Darwin to Hitler. It's an evolutionary ethics, eugenics, and racism in Germany by Richard Wickhart. In page 7, here it talks about Hitler's view. He was a social Darwinist. One fundamental component of Nazi worldview was human inequality, the notion that humans have differing values depending on their biological characteristics. Hitler believed that those biologically unequal humans, just as all other organisms, were locked in an eternal, inescapable Darwinian struggle for existence. The strong triumph and the weak perish. Darwin's terminology and rhetoric pervaded Hitler's writings and speeches, and no one, to my knowledge, has ever even questioned the common assertion by scholars that Hitler was a social Darwinist. But Hitler, people have wondered how he could get so many people to follow him with such ideas as that. But Hitler's ideas were more mainstream than I think many people realize. In page 8, it says, speaking of this, it says, on the contrary, however, many recent studies about Nazi science, especially those relating to biology, medical science, eugenics, demonstrate that many mainstream scientists, professors, and physicians, including those identifying with the political left, upheld views about Darwinism and eugenics quite similar to Hitler. He just didn't dream this up on his own. Many of Hitler's ideas derived ultimately from respectable scientists and scholars who were grappling with the implication of Darwinism for ethics and society. These included not only prominent scientists and physicians, but also professors of philosophy, economics, and geography. Even Hitler's social Darwinist views on racial extermination were upheld by prominent Darwinian scientists and social thinkers. Though often without reference to Jews, many Darwin and biologists and social theorists explained that racial extinction was inescapable and even beneficial, for it brought about evolutionary progress for the species as a whole. So, extermination was a good thing, because eventually you're going to end up with a better product. Even Hitler's mentor, he was shocked when he read, Darwin's mentor, when he read Darwin's book, because he realized the far-reaching effect this could have. Because even Mr. Armstrong said when he studied the theory, it seemed believable. This may be true. And, of course, it wasn't just a German phenomenon. This was something that at the, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, was becoming very popular and believed, just like Mr. Armstrong's sister-in-law, that the educated just felt like you were really out of touch if you would not believe this. Even in the United States, the ideas expressed by Madison Grant, president of the New York Zoological Society, in his book Passing of the Great Race, sound ominously close to Nazis' ways of thinking. Therein, Grant wrote, "Mistaken regard for what is believed to be divine laws and sentimental beliefs in the sanctity of human life tend to prevent both the elimination of defective infants and the sterilization of such adults as are themselves of no value to the community. The laws of nature require the obliteration of unfit, and human life is valuable only when it is in the use to the community or the race." The Darwinian devaluation of the human life was not just a German phenomenon. So you see how human reasoning can begin to sound so, that really makes sense. We've got a lot of people in society that are just holding the country back. We're wasting energy, financing on people that they're contributing nothing to society. Until it seems that science has become the arbiter of all truth. And people don't even realize how saturated the evolutionary theory is in the thinking of not just science, but in common people also. I wanted to read here that what Haeckel and Mr. Armstrong studied, these same people that that Hitler, of course, studied. Other leading Darwinists might have disagreed on. They agreed that natural processes could account for all aspects of human society and behavior, including ethics. They denied any possibility of divine intervention. So as God progressively began to be removed from human thinking, it began to set the stage for some real disasters. Of course, if it's not that, Satan always has something else up his sleeve anyway. You know, they just did not want to retain, as we read there in the book of Acts, they did not want to retain God in their knowledge. It says that most Darwinists explained ethics as a product of nature that, like all other natural phenomena, was constantly evolving. It was not carved on stone tablets, but written in the ever-changing sands of time. And how, in the just a few years that I've been on this earth, how the morals have totally changed. Especially, you know, this one thing I see so much is now there's no problem with people living together unmarried. And that, when I was a boy, that was just, that was somebody down by the river in a trailer or something, you know, in the van by the river, you might hear about it. But it's totally accepted now because moral standards are being adjusted to the needs of society as society sees it. Darwinism implied that humans arose from animals, and many interpreted this to mean that humans did not have the special position accorded them in Judeo-Christian thought. Instead of being made in the image of God and falling from a pristine state of perfection, humans ascended from some kind of a evolutionary process. So, this was just like it was laying the groundwork. This starts 100 years before a real disaster occurs, but it's like it's being, the groundwork's being laid. You know, it's like you just follow your impulses is what it comes down to. It says here that Darwin neatly summed up his view of ethics and morality in his autobiography, stating that one who does not believe in God or an afterlife, as he did not, can have for his rule of life, as far as I can see, only to follow those impulses and instincts which are the strongest, or which seem to him the best ones. Now, I mean, that is a great life when you can just choose. I think, hey, I like this moral standard. And if I don't like that after a while, I'll change to this moral standard. Evolutionary thought just opened the door to give this some class and to, you know, make it respectable. And, you know, the ethics would just keep changing as whatever society deemed it should. Morality, too, is a product of evolution.